Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
I'm trying to calculate, but I have no idea if the moves they're making are mistakes or not. It's a very complex sending. But the audience is reacting, like very audibly, and I can also see the players can hear it. If they just paid me a starting fee, no prizes, no tour points, and told me you play, and this is the way the tournament is, I'm not going to complain. Like, let's say that you want to make chess a business. I'm not an expert, but I can't imagine that the way towards that business is live ticket sales. I just don't see it. I think, like, if you want to make it a business, you have to sell it to, for example, Prime or Netflix.
But also, they deleted your interview, man. All right. Welcome back, everybody, to another C Squared podcast episode. This is it, the recap of Freestyle. Freestyle just finished a couple of days ago, and it finished with quite a lot of controversy coming from you, coming from pretty much all the players, in fact. A lot of discussion back and forth between some of the players against some of the players against the organizer and so on and so forth. A lot of different points of opinion. So, but also, they deleted your interview, man.
They put it back up.
They put it back up today.
I think yesterday.
The backlash.
Yeah, well, I don't think they had any need to remove it in the first place. But yeah, eventually they put it back up. Okay.
It's not like I... Were you offended by that?
Not really, but, you know... I mean, the thing is, obviously they're not censoring me, right? I can speak pretty freely. I don't think their intention was to. I just don't know why they decided to delete it, I guess, to have time to discuss what to do. But, you know, it usually doesn't work very well to do that.
Yeah.
If you tried to hide something, usually it tends to come out in a more...
Tenfold.
The Streisand effect, right? Yeah, I had some complaints, which I'm sure they'll work in the future to do better. I don't think it really made sense to not say anything because, you know, they're going to have more events. I'm probably going to play more of their events. So why should I not let them know that there's some issue?
So what did you say? Let's redo the interview more or less. Like, what was the biggest complaint about the event, about the organization? Obviously, this came after your loss against Hikaru. Because there were some...
It was after the tournament, just to...
Actually,
just
after the tournament.
Yeah, it was after I beat Arjun. But yeah, I didn't want to give an interview immediately after I lost the match versus Hikaru. Mm-hmm. You know, first of all, because I was going to wait anyway. And also, I still had to play another match. So there was still something at stake. It was a match for 10 grand. It was a match for some extra circuit points. So there was something to play for against Arjun. And I was going to say something either way, but of course it helps a bit if you win, then at least, you know, you don't look super salty.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Helps a little bit, but my result would not have affected my opinion. Like, also, if I'd beaten Hikaru, it wouldn't have affected my opinion. If I won the whole thing, it wouldn't have affected my opinion about how it should have been organized.
And this more or less started at the beginning, at the not at the opening ceremony, but at the players' meeting. They revealed the fact that the spectators, which are going to be very close to the arena, are going to have access to the live commentary with eval bar, with pretty much everything. I think there was a 5 seconds delay or something along those lines, but not enough. Like, you could see the eval bar going up and down, and obviously the players are...
I mean, there wasn't supposed to be any delay. Maybe there was, for technical reasons, some delay.
There definitely was.
But we had this discussion, should there be any delay, and they didn't want to go for anything.
And that leads to spectators reacting to the swings, obviously. They might not understand necessarily what's happening on the board, but they will see the bar, they will hear the commentary, and they will get excited. That's going to lead to them, obviously, being loud at times.
Yeah, that much is pretty clear. I mean, it would be very naive to assume it doesn't happen. If you've been to any sort of anything which involves people, you know they do tend to react, and also people tend to get loud.
Yeah.
Regardless of the environment, people tend to get loud, and the louder it gets, the louder people become.
Just for clarification, I don't think this was the first time that they did eval bar in the playing hole. We actually had a discussion with Danny yesterday at dinner. He did say they did that during Paris as well, but they had some very strong earphones.
Well, in the end, they removed it because they couldn't ensure. So they removed the eval bar, and then they, I think, gave some sort of refund.
Got it.
So their goal was to have people that can view the eval bar with a glass wall, and then also a headset and noise cancellation of some sort. But they decided that it wouldn't block out all the noise, so they decided...
That was in Paris.
Yeah, that was in Paris.
CCT in Paris, yes.
Which I think, in the end, they were happy about their decision. But it's a totally different scenario. I mean, to start with, we've had live audience at many events, but usually they're just there to watch the players playing the games without any information. For example, at the St. Louis Chess Club for many, many years, there was a... audience standing about 5 feet away from the players with a barrier.
Yep.
But they don't really know exactly what's going on. They just can see the games and the players. They can maybe gauge something based on the reaction of the players. Maybe if the spectator is a strong player themselves, they can guess something about the position to some extent. But they don't know exactly what's going on. And also, when you have something that reacts very quickly, then people tend to react strongly to that. So it's not even commentary, but just you see
the bar,
a bar which moves very quickly and happens in a fraction of a second. And it can go from all the way up white to all the way down for black.
The most glaring example, especially in the first few days, was the game between Magnus and Wesley, when Magnus basically allowed checkmate in a few moves.
Sure, that's one example.
You could hear, actually, on the broadcast, the audience just like gasping. And then both of the players more or less realized that. Probably Wesley would have found it anyway.
Sure, most likely, yeah.
But it led to a checkmate, you know. And
yeah, I think the one thing is that when you have something that's very visual like that, people will react. If it was just commentary, I think people could definitely react as well. But there would probably be a delay on the commentary, as the commentators say, oh, something's happening, what's happening? And then, and it would take like maybe 5-10 seconds, and then they would go back and forth, and it would be like a... But when you just see the like split second, you know, one side to the other, it's a whole different sort of thing.
Were they jumping off from their seats?
Well, I didn't look at the audience.
Ah, you didn't watch the audience, okay.
I mean, also...
You could only hear it, I guess.
Yeah, I could hear. I wouldn't want to look towards the audience, for many reasons. One is because I don't want people to think that I'm looking there and maybe someone's giving me a signal. That's another issue entirely, that there would be ways for the players and the audience to interact. Mm. And there was no protection against that. There is the visual element where if I want, I can have someone in the audience who signals and I can freely see them and they have information because they had their phones with them too. So... another thing that I had an issue with, which, like, that was the first thing I raised. Can audience have their phones? And then before we could even resolve that, Hikaru mentioned that the audience can actually see the eval bar, something that he knew that I didn't know. Mm-hmm. And then we got into that discussion because obviously the phone thing became an entirely separate issue when you just have the information freely there. So... Yeah, I think they didn't take the security as seriously as it should have been. I mean, I can give you an example of how it would be very easy to orchestrate like cheating with a second person in the audience.
Of course.
I mean, I, like, no, without even easy. Like giving looks to the audience, which of course might give a sign that, you know, I'm doing something, I can exit the stage, and then when I'm coming back, at that point, the person, I would have like a very clear
There's view. A big move.
Yeah, like I basically the boards were in a kind of a semicircle like this, and then to go out into the players, there was a backstage area, players room with like food and water and whatever. You would go out like this, and then when you come back in, you have a direct view to the audience. It would even be very natural that once I'm walking out, someone in the front row gives some sort of signal. I just need 5 different signals for pieces.
Yeah.
I know the piece. And then I just know which piece to move, for example. I mean, just off the top of my head, something stupid like that. So that's why you can't have a visual element between the audience and the players. Mm. Of course, I don't think that happened, but you just don't want to have the possibility, especially sure. since we're being scanned for all sorts of devices to make sure we don't have any devices. But if you don't scan the audience, it's kind of for nothing. I mean, okay, it's maybe for something, it helps a bit, but it still doesn't protect entirely. So the visual element, that's why chess.com wanted a glass wall at their events to block out that possibility. I think you could also do it with a darkened audience, right? Lights that that only shine on the stage also works, but we didn't have that. I could see the audience.
Yeah,
it was possible to see them. So one issue. Other issue is noise. The issue that
I think this was the big one.
Yeah, the big people
mostly complained about.
Sure.
Yeah,
it's what we spent about an hour discussing at the players' meeting with basically no.
What was the outcome
resolution
of that meeting? Like when you left to go to your room, like what did you think will happen the next day?
Well, the outcome at the meeting was that it's going to remain the same. Because a bunch of things were suggested. One was headphones, which not everyone would agree on. One was a delay, which not everyone would agree on. And I think very fairly, because as Magnus said, it is ridiculous to have a delay.
I agree with that, yeah. Delay doesn't make too much sense.
You should just, like, it's probably better just not to have spectators than to have a delay where it just looks ridiculous for them. Like,
yeah.
Players are gone and they're still watching the game.
And they're still playing, yeah. On the screen.
So, okay, that's fair enough. And I think fair enough that some players don't want headphones because it's not comfortable. That's a personal thing. Sure. I mean, the players are going to advocate for themselves first and foremost. So if they think it's uncomfortable for them, then fair enough. So that was the resolution that at some point Magnus went off. Everyone left after that, maybe 20 minutes later, with the resolution, if you want to call it that, being that we just keep everything the same. Everything remains the same, which is not a solution, but you can sort of say, we just hope for the best.
Mm-hmm.
Then at dinner, I heard from someone that things have changed and that now we're going to have headphones, which I was in support of. At the players' meeting, I thought headphones were a good, decent solution. But suddenly things had changed without the players' agreement. It had just changed behind the scenes. Fair enough. So then before the game, before the first round of the preliminary stage, I was under the impression that all the players had to wear headphones. I think many people were under that impression. As it turns out, not everyone was wearing headphones because some other people had heard that it was optional. Which, of course, if it's optional, then you might as well not do it.
This actually makes no sense.
It makes no sense to have it optional.
It, first of all, if there's any noise coming from the audience, you should respect the players and just actually force them, make it mandatory to wear headphones.
I thought it was mandatory.
It should be mandatory, yes.
But you can also see Hikaru's video where he said, and that was the first time I noticed when I was playing Hikaru, that he didn't seem to be wearing anything. I didn't mention it to him because, you know, I didn't want to like start a controversy before the game.
Sure.
I wore my headphones throughout, but I thought that he had forgotten. As it turns out, he had heard that it was optional, which I'm sure is true. And that's why he didn't wear them. And probably he's also said that someone else wasn't wearing them.
My understanding was that if you wear them or if you don't wear them, you basically cannot, once the game starts, you cannot change it. Like if you wear the headphones, you cannot take them off during the game. If you don't wear the headphones, you cannot put them on during the game. Once the game starts. So basically you have to make a decision. You either wear headphones or you don't.
Can you explain any logic behind this to me?
there's no logic. Okay. I mean, I'm not making the rules.
No, I understand. I'm just like trying to understand why this would be.
I
hadn't even heard of this.
That's what I've heard. I might be wrong on this one.
Like I was told before the round, before the preliminary stage, that everyone will be wearing headphones, that it is mandatory.
Yeah.
So anyway, there were no serious issues as far as I can tell in the preliminary stage. Maybe that game between Wesley and Magnus. I don't know if the players felt it was a real issue. In my games, there wasn't a real issue, and I didn't speak to anyone who said there was an issue. So anyway, then the matches start, and Hikaru said that from this point on, he was told that they are mandatory.
Mm-hmm. Which it probably changed after.
Yeah, sure.
Like it always changed.
I mean, obviously, you can't have regulations that are changing mid-event as well.
That's a problem.
I mean, it's like we had this during the Sinkfield Cup 2022 that suddenly measures changed because we had like limited security measures, and then there was a lot of scanning after Magnus left the tournament. But that was a very special circumstance. I mean, a player leaving the tournament.
Yeah.
Here, nothing really happened, and then suddenly players are being told that, well, I wasn't told this, but I assume based on Hikaru's accounting, that players are being told that suddenly you go from no headphones or optional to headphones. Okay. Now, what actually happened that was an issue? So I can think of two examples. I mean, probably three, but two clear ones. One was the first Blitz game, or maybe first like 10-minute rapid game between Hikaru and Levon. It ended in a queen end game. Levon had three pawns, one a D pawn, H and G pawns, and Hikaru had H and G pawns, and they both had queens. This is very similar to an end game I had against Magnus in Norway Chess. So I was watching it with interest because I was trying to remember what happened in my game against Magnus, and also what are the differences with this one. And then at some point, they're making moves. And from my point of view, I have no idea if the moves they're making... Like, I'm looking, I'm trying to calculate, but I have no idea if the moves they're making are mistakes or not. It's a very complex ending.
Right.
But the audience is reacting, like, very audibly. And I can also see the players can hear it. While I'm just watching from outside. I'm not wearing headphones, so I can obviously hear it.
Do you remember if both of them were wearing headphones at this point?
Yeah.
Both of them,
yeah. And so I can hear... But the players also seem to be reacting to that. And obviously, if the audience is reacting, that means the evaluation is changing. Now, if the evaluation is changing, that pretty much means that at some point, Black is winning. That means Levon is winning. Now, it's hard to tell exactly when because they're moving pretty fast and the audience could be reacting to something two moves ago or maybe it's changed since then. But still, there are swings, which I can imagine is distracting for players. In the moment.
Huge, yeah. And it's a huge tell. Not only distracting, but it's a huge tell.
Yeah, it's potentially a huge tell because maybe you have like a minute to think about now they reacted, does what changed? Maybe you'll figure out, maybe not. But even if not, it gets in your head. Did I miss a win?
Correct.
Did I miss a draw? And so on and so forth. Okay, so that was one instance, which I wasn't involved in. The other instance, which I won't really mention as very important, is my Armageddon game. Well, actually, no, there's two games against Prague. So one was the Blitz game where I was up in exchange, then I completely messed it up, then I was losing. And of course, the audience is reacting.
You mean the two rooks versus rook and knight and
yeah,
one
yeah.
race?
Yeah. The audience is definitely reacting, but it all moved so fast that I couldn't even be distracted.
Right.
And I can't speak for Prague. Maybe he was distracted, but it was just moving way too fast for me to even even register the audience reaction.
By the way, that was a crazy match.
Yeah, crazy match. And then the Armageddon game, of course, they were allowed again, but it didn't really matter so much at that point because I was a rook up and they were just reacting to the time scramble. But it couldn't have possibly changed the game at that point because I was just a rook up for nothing. Mm-hmm. But just because it doesn't affect it is just pure luck. Mm-hmm. Like we're just hoping that they won't be allowed at an important moment. So there's that match against Prague. And then the one which really irritated me was the first Blitz game against Hikaru, where I was completely losing for quite a period. But then once Hikaru got down to seconds, and I was also down to seconds, he couldn't find the clear win. He retreated his queen. It was move queen to a3. And from this moment on, after queen to a3, it was just nonstop noise. And I would categorize it as screaming. I don't think it's any less than screaming. Basically, with every move, there was like screaming, just very, very loud.
Somebody
noise.
Was reacting, or a group of people were reacting.
Not just one person, yeah.
Quite strongly.
Yeah, very strongly. And of course I understand, and Hikaru understands that he messed it up. Right. He also knows that queen a3 can't be the right move. And I know queen a3 can't be the right move, but we have 5 seconds. You go on instinct. But it was just very difficult, not even like the tells, which of course, maybe I would have gotten a tell and realized I'm winning. But the tells that there's just very loud noise and you can't concentrate when you have 5 seconds and there's very, very loud noise. And it's not like a normal sports event, I think, where the noise is constant. Mm-hmm. It's a change. It goes from silent to very loud. It's a bit jarring, you know? I think it's different from a normal sports event.
And I think this is something that Jan-Henrik Bittner, the organizer, mentioned. He sort of made the equivalent to tennis, which does not make a lot of sense because in tennis, first of all, sure, the audience generally is told to be quiet during the points and before somebody serves, but the noise is pretty glaring between the players because the players can scream. I mean, there's always some noise happening, right? In tennis, it's not quiet like we are
sure.
used to.
Yeah,
to be in chess. Also, it's not like whenever you know you have a great move, let's say, or like the eval is changing in your favor or in your opponent's favor, it's not the same as in tennis. Like it's just in tennis, it's a beautiful shot, sure, and then somebody responds with a beautiful shot, but the eval of the whole point does not change, right?
Based yeah, well, I mean, the first thing is that in tennis, you don't have secret information, right? In chess,
exactly.
You do.
Yeah.
I mean, the players are on their own,
yeah,
and you watching or not. In tennis, you don't have that. I mean, everyone can see where the ball is going, and it's about the players are making their shots, but their shots aren't based on someone yelling something out, right?
And I think we should probably make it clear that we should find a system. I understand the balance between entertainment and chess and purity of chess, but we should find a system that doesn't necessarily damage the whole integrity of the game, right? I think this is key. Like, I think there are ways in which you can do that. And they're probably quite simple. The question is, and they're spending so much money. Like, it's not that it's a money issue or a logistics issue. I hope it's not, because they're spending so much money.
No, they just didn't think it through.
Have a glass door. Have the players play in a fishbowl, like in the World Championship match. You can set that up, especially in Vegas. I mean, they have so much, so many possibilities, right?
Yeah, I think they could have done it. They just didn't think it through at the beginning, and then it was too late once we got to the players' meeting. So that's one issue.
But how can you not think about it when you organize something with a live audience? Like,
I'm not behind the scenes, so I don't know. I don't know what exactly the discussions were, what they were thinking about, what they weren't thinking about. Maybe they were only thinking about the spectacle and they weren't thinking about... The thing is, like, you have to look at it from a player's point of view.
Yeah.
And they're not chess players for the most part. So, like, to see the issues, you have to imagine that you're playing, which I can do and you can do.
But this is from, you know, you guys have been chatting about these type of situations in Weissenhaus, in Paris.
We didn't have a live audience. Or we had a very small audience.
In Paris we had.
Yeah, but it was a small one, you know.
Sure. Yeah. Yes.
And it was a normal one. They could just see the screens. They couldn't hear the commentary or anything.
Correct.
And in that case, it's like you're in a library. People are very quiet. That's true. Like, I think we also have to differentiate between serious events and exhibition events. Like, there's an event in October I'll play, USA versus India. It's going to be an exhibition event. It's just for fun. It's not for huge money, it's not for ratings, it's not for tour points, it's not something where, like, you're kind of just playing for your team, and there's going to be a live audience, and it's probably going to be very loud, but I don't care, because I understand I'm going into the event knowing it's an exhibition event. When I go to freestyle events, I take them as serious events.
They are serious events.
Where I care about my result, there's prestige on the line, there's money.
There's rating nowadays.
There's even some freestyle rating, which I don't know what exactly it's going to be.
It's going to be impactful.
Sure.
Maybe not right now, maybe not this year, but in the future it's going to matter.
Sure. But in any case, I take them seriously. So when I go to the event, I air my complaints out or my concerns as if it was a serious event.
Sure.
If they just paid me a starting fee, no prizes, no tour points, and told me you play and these are this is the way the tournament is, I'm not going to complain.
It's only for the show.
Yes. Yeah, it's your show. You run the show how you want.
Sure.
But if it's another way, then I'm going to insist on like very serious measures.
And from your perspective and from the player's perspective, I think this is the correct way to approach this problem, right? Because you make the moves. You are getting invitations based on the strength of your moves, right? You're going to get those, that strength is going to get damaged whenever you hear people screaming around you. So the question is, how do we handle that? How do we manage that? Or how do they manage that, obviously? But we're trying to find a solution as well to connect and make it a good show for the audience, for the live audience, because you want to sell the tickets. You want to put asses in the seats. And make it so that players don't have these type of situations arise, those type of problems.
Look, if they insist on the eval bar, which I'm not...
They probably will.
I'm not all for it. I understand that it's useful for online audience, but I think if you really can't follow chess without... when you're being told the moves by like three grandmasters in a room, when you have like Peter, Judith, and Nicholas, then get better at chess and then come back. Like, I'm being honest. I mean, if you really need something that it has nothing to do with chess, it's just... like it's a yo-yo. It has nothing to do with chess.
It's visual. It's a visual cue.
It has nothing to do with chess. We could be watching any sport and they could put a random bar and you can react to it.
It's fun. It's sure. For the entertainment. It's yeah, purely entertainment.
But I don't think it's needed. That's my personal opinion, which many people will disagree with.
Yes.
I'm like many. I know that. I know how many people will disagree with it. I mean, probably the vast majority of people.
Even I want to see the eval if I am seeing this from the lens of the audience. Like if I am paying $250 to go to Vegas and watch you guys watch the show, maybe I do want to see that eval bar. Like I understand that from the audience perspective, it makes some sense.
Like, okay, I'll explain why I don't, first of all, think it's necessary. I think you're already hearing a lot. You're getting everything explained to you. You're also there for the visual experience of seeing, like, I don't need to know all the intricacies of a tennis match. I understand it's pretty simple, but I don't need to know... if this is a slice, if this is a good forehand, if it's not, I don't really need to know because I'm there for the visual experience. I can follow it for the most part without getting too in-depth.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably have some commentators telling me some things which are important.
Mm-hmm.
I understand chess is a bit different. It's more specialized, but you also have three people who really know the game, or sometimes more than three people who really know the game, explaining things. If they're not explaining things well, then that's on them. If they're explaining things well, then you should be able to understand it without this completely meaningless thing.
Sure. I can like, see that point as
this
well.
This thing has nothing to do with the game. I understand that it gives you the evaluation, but the evaluation is just a number. It has nothing to do with whether the players will find it. That will be more like what the commentators can tell you. It has nothing to do with whether or not it's easy. And also, it doesn't really have to do with the game because you could understand that it's winning, but you won't know anything about how to win or not. So I can tell you something's winning, like the same way that I can tell you that this is an easy shot or this is an easy basket, but you won't actually know anything about it if I just tell you it's easy, right?
So you have to make it.
It's easy or hard. I mean, it doesn't give you any information.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, okay, that's some people disagree and that's actually
leave
fair.
The bar aside. I mean, you get the commentary.
Let's say they want the bar.
It doesn't matter. You have the bar, you don't have the bar, it doesn't matter.
I think without the bar, it does like change the noise issue a bit.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so.
Just because...
Yeah, I think it's like very... Yeah, just very...
Ping pong.
Mm-hmm. I think it's just like very cinematic. So people react to it very strongly. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, let's just say that you want the bar because I know many people do. And sure. Many audience members do. And organizers definitely do. Yes. Like all organizers that I've talked to, chess.com, if you talk to them... The eval bar was like a game changer for them.
It's important, yes.
So if you want the eval bar, then you need some sort of barrier, I think, which could be a box, a glass box with a one-way mirror, one-way glass. That's one way. The other way is to have like complete noise cancellation, which might be difficult, and the way to get it could be like could be an issue that doesn't have a solution because if you have music... I don't think everyone will be happy with music during a game. I personally will not be too happy with music. I think it's distracting. If you have just standard noise cancellation, it doesn't work out. If you have white noise, it can actually be pretty unpleasant, I think, to listen to white noise for like 6 hours or more. So then, and if you have like two different, sometimes they do the in-ear and then the outer ear, can actually be physically annoying after a while, right?
100%.
So then you need probably the like some sort of glass box or glass barrier, something like that.
Yeah, I think that's the only solution as well. I tend to agree. I have an extra layer to that, but I'm not going to give it to the audience, give it to everybody, because maybe one day I will start my own chess competition.
Fair enough.
Yes.
The sports thing I think is interesting because I talked to a bunch of commentators and players after the last day, and a lot of them like felt that the parallel to other sports is relevant. Like in other sports, you have noise. Why can't you in chess? And they talked about golf. In golf, usually it's silent, but now they're going to try to make it more of a spectator experience.
Really? That,
that's what I heard. I don't know much about golf, but this is what I heard, where it's going to be more loud, which is, I don't know much about golf, so I can't comment on that. Tennis,
it's somewhat similar, I guess, in terms of focus, right? You have this shot and you focus everything on it. And obviously if you're going to have somebody start screaming, you're going to be distracted by that.
I think that could be relevant. In tennis, you have the serve, which is people are silent during the serve.
Exactly. Yeah.
And a lot of tennis players won't serve if they hear some noise, they just won't serve until it gets completely silent. Which I think is relevant, because if we're talking about something in concentration, then the serve or maybe a golf swing will be similar to chess, where you have to focus on this one thing and then you get into the rhythm of things. While in chess, you always have to think about your next move, right? And the other thing is, if we're talking about sports which are just generally noisy, then yeah, it's a constant. It's not something that breaks. Like let's say if tennis was always silent and then suddenly there was like some noise out of the blue, I think that would be more distracting than if it was just a general kind of hum, right?
Yes.
In the background. Yes. And the other thing is that a lot of these sports are played outside where noise dissipates pretty quickly.
I just had a thought. Snooker. Have you ever watched snooker?
Like very little. I don't know if it's noisy or not, but I think they're silent, right?
They're very silent, yeah. And it's played indoors. So basically it's somewhat similar to chess. And the crowd is completely blacked out. Like you cannot really see the crowd. I don't know if it matters, obviously. I don't think you can get cues.
Maybe they're trying to avoid some distraction from the audience.
But that's probably the reason, yeah.
Because I don't imagine what information you can get that the players themselves don't already have.
Yeah. But also I would assume snooker is not that. I don't know if it's popular or not. I guess it's not like...
But whether it's popular or not, it doesn't really matter. Chess was also not popular.
But this is what we're trying... This is what they're trying to achieve, right? This is the organizers' goal, dream, right? They want to popularize chess in a way which brings a new audience into the game. And they're trying to do that using all of these visual cues, I guess, is the way they're trying.
I mean, I do really wonder about the... Like, let's say that you want to make chess a business. I'm not an expert, but I can't imagine that the way towards that business is live ticket sales. I just don't see it. I think like if you want to make it a business, you have to sell it to, for example, Prime or Netflix.
Sure.
You have to sell the rights to the show.
Sure.
Because like imagine ticket sales. There are a few places in the world where people will...
But also ticket sales. Like it should be a part of it. It should be a part of the business plan.
But let's just like go through some numbers. Like there's only a few places in the world, I think, where you're going to be able to sell tickets for $300 a pop. Okay. I mean, I don't think that like, and actually sell it in an arena. I mean,
I don't know.
We're talking about a few places and pretty much only in the United States, I think.
Think about it this way. Levy, he had the tour in Europe and that was just like a talk show tour, more or less. He was selling like 1,000 seats.
But that's not a chess event. I mean,
it's kind of a chess event, right?
Well,
he was playing chess. He was doing like some show.
I mean, he was giving a talk or like people like got him chess, not because of his chess strength, with all due respect. I mean, like he's a personality and he's very popular.
Right. But that's what
they're trying to do. But in the same way that like Joe Rogan is popular.
Sure.
And not to the same extent, but like it's not because Levy, he is a good player, of course, but there are hundreds of players better than him.
But still, it's chess fans that are
it's Gotham chess fans
that are coming to his shows.
I really think there's a distinction. It's fans of Levy.
Sure.
It's not fans of chess. They may have only watched Levy. They might not have watched chess outside of Levy.
Okay, maybe it's not a good comparison. I don't know.
I think I could be wrong. I mean, there's obviously a connection. I mean, he's a chess YouTuber and personality and commentator and so on.
But if he can sell 1,000 seaters, then chess as a show should be able to do that as well with so many personalities. Like you have yourself, you have Magnus, you have Hikaru playing in the same tournament. That's a lot of personalities already. You have Hans, that's a lot of personality as well. It should be able to sell 1,000 seater.
It's possible. On the other hand, like
5,000 seater.
A speech or a talk or a press conference is much more accessible than the chess event. That's one thing. I mean, like everyone can listen to a talk.
Sure.
Not everyone can follow chess.
But that's the thing. I think we have the numbers. Like, I think we have the numbers of people that can understand chess and are interested in seeing players compete against each other. Like, I think that we have those numbers right now. The question is how to make it accessible.
I am ready to be wrong on this. Yes. Like, it is possible that you will sell 1,000 seats a day
more
for a week.
Hopefully more, yes.
I'm very skeptical, but it is possible.
Yeah. I mean, we're not there yet. Like, 100% we're not
in,
there
in
yet.
In freestyle, I think probably the entire capacity was about 300. I didn't count every seat. I don't know the numbers. And on the last day, I think it was pretty much sold out. With a caveat that there were people like from the organization, from the players and so on and so forth. So of course it wasn't entirely sold out because there were a portion of those were people involved in the event directly. Outside of the final day, I think it was a bit, like some days were kind of maybe half
sparse.
Some days were like 10% of seats. Some, you know,
10%, that bad, huh?
Some were kind of close to empty some days, which also you can't blame people if they're like their final match is my match against Prague and it's already 11 hours into the day.
Speaking of that, I think that's a problem. I think they should focus very much on shortening the days somehow.
Yeah, like I think they're going to work on that. So I'm not going to complain about it.
Like 3-4 hour shows must be the most you're going to play.
Yeah, it was literally like you guys can look back on the first quarterfinal match. It was an 11-hour, 7-minute show.
Yeah,
we didn't play for that entire duration of time, but the show from start to finish was 11 hours 7 minutes, which I don't know. Like there are some sports that do this.
You're not going to sell the rights to any company,
basically. But yeah, it's pretty unusual.
On
right?
ESPN with an 11-hour show.
The best chess show I've ever watched was a 45-minute show. It was I don't think they're doing it anymore, but it was this Armageddon series. I liked it.
Those were fun. Yeah,
I liked it. It was literally like 45 minutes from start to finish. I would basically just sit down, have like a little snack, and then don't waste my time figuring out who's going to win this tournament. They also invited me to play, but I felt the format was too complicated, so I declined playing. And then I looked at it; it was kind of fun. I was like, well, maybe I should have actually accepted this invitation. But the shorter, not necessarily the better, but there's definitely diminishing returns. And at some point, you're just wasting time in the show. Mm-hmm. But okay, I think they're going to fix that. They're going to find a better, I actually trust that they'll find a better format. Because they've also said that they're looking into the format and it was too complicated, I think they realize that this group and that group and then the groups are merging and the time controls are changing, it's not ideal. So I'm not complaining about that because I think they're experimenting and they're going to find a better product in the future. Mm-hmm. About like ticket sales, I'm not sure if that's the future of chess. I think the future is maybe more the online scene, like the online viewership. But I'm ready to be wrong. I don't have the vision for it.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
We'll also see in October in Texas that we're having this event in Arlington. I don't know. They're going to try to sell tickets for that. Yeah, I think they'll have 1,000 plus seats or more. Maybe it's going to be 5,000 seats. I don't even know how many seats they have. So we'll get like some indication if they can successfully try to sell an arena.
I'm curious about that too.
Yeah, or how much. Maybe they'll sell 500 tickets. That's also not bad.
And I'm curious to see when they're going to push the marketing, because right now the marketing is just non-existent. And the problem is, with those type of one-day events, you also don't have some sort of history so that people get attached to. Like, I feel you need that as well.
That's what they're trying to create, of course. It's the first event, right?
Yeah, yeah. But you think it's going to continue? You think that's going to be some sort of a series or something like that?
Oh, I can't comment on... I mean, I'm playing this event.
Yeah.
Anything which hasn't been formally announced, I can't comment on.
Got it. Yeah, no problem.
But yeah, it's just like the first event, of course, you're not going to have much legacy, assuming that there's more events in the future.
The recent comments from the organizer, from Jan Henrik, kind of sounded like, okay, you guys were doing something revolutionary and you guys need to adapt. I feel there has to be a middle ground to that. Like, you cannot approach things like that because you're just going to lose the players and lose the willingness of the chess community as well. I think you have to bridge the gap and you have to find a way to make it compatible and balance your idea and your vision of making it entertaining for the crowd, but also prioritize the integrity of the game. And the way to do that, I guess it's a simple one, like you just said. I mean, glass door. Put the players in a fishbowl. And I think the players are going to enjoy that as well, because they're not going to have to wear the headphones anymore. They're going to be playing the game that they're used to be playing. And you're going to get rid of that problem. And then outside of the glass box, everybody can do whatever they want. I mean, it's a simple solution. I guess it costs probably a lot of money. It puts some...
I think about 50 grand you get a... I mean, from what I've heard, yeah, about 50 grand, then you can probably... get a glass kind of wall, yeah, constructed for your
cage event. Of some sort. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know about boxes or things like that, but I mean, it probably depends on where you are and how easily can it be built in a room.
50,000 is nothing.
I've also done it outside. I've been played in a glass box, which is outside, so people are standing on the street basically looking
at it. That was in Spain, right?
In Brazil and Spain.
Uh-huh. I remember.
In
that.
Sao Paulo and Bilbao. So that's.
Was that insulating in terms of noise?
It was also so long ago, I don't really remember, but I don't think there was any noise.
Yeah.
I just think the smell was a bit, like, smelled a bit weird.
That's a different problem.
But we did play without complaints in that event.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think that could be a solution. The other thing is, I think the organizers put, like, a lot of money into it, and they do a good job. And they also think that the players will generally, like, always be on board. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, like, the players who, like, win, they make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But the vast majority of players in this tournament don't get close to making big money. I mean, like, there were 16 players. From 16 to 13, they got 7,500, which very quickly goes down when you consider that there are some costs involved in this. And it's also 10 days event, so it's 750 a day, and then there's costs, and it's no longer an enormous prize. And then from 12 to 9, it was, I don't want to get it wrong, but it was
10,000?
Either 10 or 12,
sure,
something like that.
Decent money,
again, but it's 1,000 a day. There are expenses involved. If you're, like, staying in Vegas and there's food costs, and there's also people took seconds, some of them, for example, I did, and there's flights, mm-hmm, for example.
No, the flights were not covered.
I mean, again, I can't speak for everything, but there are some flight costs.
Seconds, yeah, whatnot, yeah.
And again, if you're talking about, for example, players like Lenier, they make a good living, you mm-hmm know, in general. Mm-hmm. Their life is not changed by the existence of this 10K, right? Now, there are players who made, well, there's one player who made 200,000, and there are players who made over 100,000.
I mean, to be honest, anything over 50 is, like, extremely good money.
Yeah, like, those are four prizes over 50.
Like, you made 50.
I made 50, right? And I would say that this is...
You got fifth or what?
This is, yeah, especially for how I played, it's a very good prize because I didn't do anything special.
Yeah.
But if you, the players who are in contention to win events, it's actually a very small group. It's, you know, like realistically 10 people in the world who can really fight for first. Oh, I mean, of course, anyone can like have a great tournament, have a great run. Mm-hmm. But realistically, it's going to be, the money is going to be concentrated in the hands of a few.
That's happening with every single event.
Like, sure.
This is not something.
But you're not going to convince the vast majority of players that this is the golden goose. Right? I mean, already Gukesh stepped away from accepting the invitation. And he is the world champion.
I think we'll see him back. I mean,
sure, we might. Yeah, no, I won't say we won't.
As one of the biggest examples.
But he did not make like serious money.
Sure.
Because his results were not like, he was losing the quarterfinal match and sure. He wasn't qualifying for the knockout stage in Paris. And he decided that, I mean, if you told him you're going to like, I offer you $100,000 to play the event, he's accepting because nobody says no to $100,000 to play a 5-day event. But if you tell him you have the chance of 200K if you have the best run of your life, or, you know, last place is 7,500, he made his decision. I think it was probably monetarily based that he didn't see the value in it. Mm-hmm. Alireza as well. I mean, for me, it's been great money, but I don't think that it's like revolutionary, you know? Mm. I'm just trying to say that it's not, you have to also have tournaments that will make players happy. It's even more important than the money, mm-hmm. I think.
No, I agree. And again, you should be able to strike a balance between making the players happy and getting to your goals as an organizer, which is to put on the show that you have the vision for. Because this is important as well. I mean, the organizer has to be happy. They have to put on the show they want. Find the balance. And I think the balance in this case, in fact, is not super difficult. Just get the glass door, insulate the players from the noise. And that's basically it. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, if they can do that, they'll probably make the players happy, which is a solution for that. And then they can work on their main business idea, which
then they can do whatever they
want. Is, of course, a bigger challenge, yeah. Right?
And this happens this is also an important thing from a show perspective. You have to say, hey, this is our arena. Like, you can make a thing out of that. You can make a part of the show out of that. Like, this is the arena that the players are going to be in. In MMA, you have the octagon. In boxing, you have the ring. Like, there is always a place where the players meet. And this could be something that they patent, you know?
Well, it's not new, so they would...
It's not new. Yeah, but... It's not new, but they can make something new. They can make a hexagon box. I don't know.
Sure. They can make any shape they want.
They can do whatever. Yeah,
I don't care about the shape, personally.
Exactly. But they can make a show out of that. It can actually add value to their production and their product in general. Anyway,
yeah, they can, of course, like, for example, they patented freestyle. You know, they didn't create a new game.
Exactly.
Hikaru made the brand. Point of this, which
is the brand. Yeah.
I think Hikaru's point was a bit trivial. Like, I thought it wasn't really the most important thing. He was kind of annoyed by the name Freestyle because we've already had this game. It's Fischer Random or Chess 960. We've had different names for it. But the idea that you scramble the pieces is not new. Nothing has really changed except it's been branded as Freestyle, which I think is fair. I mean, you know, to me, the name is a bit inconsequential. If they think Freestyle is a better name that resonates more with people who are coming to chess for the first time and wondering, like, what's Fischer Random? I mean,
it's their brand.
It's fair enough.
I mean, it's the business brand.
Not everyone knows Fischer, and for non-chess people, Fischer Random is a strange-sounding name.
Who's Fischer and why is he random? Yeah,
yeah. But I mean, it is a strange-sounding name, especially if you're not. And Chess 960 is also a bit weird because you have to explain to people that there are 960 possible positions, but only if the king is between two rooks and only if the bishops are on opposite colors and so on. So to call it Freestyle is a decent or maybe even a very good marketing tool. But yeah, it is marketing. It's which I'm okay with.
And that's it. That's it in terms of discussion about logistics, about the show itself, about the tournament. But how about the games? Should we talk about that as well? Should we talk about should we give some highlights about the tournament as a whole and how it went and what surprised you, what didn't? How did you feel about your play, about the players' like Hans, like Magnus, not making it out of the group stage, which was a bit of a shocker, especially after the first three rounds when he was like 2.5 out of three or something like that.
Yeah, there are a lot of storylines in the tournament.
And your result. And of course, Levon. I mean, Levon coming out as definitely not one of the favorites and winning it, I would say, outside of the match against Hikaru, I would say quite convincingly.
Like, before the tournament, I would say Levon is one of those potential favorites.
Dark horses, yes.
Yeah, you could say that. I mean, he's...
Oh, you would count him as one of the favorites?
I would count him among a group of players who can potentially win the tournament. Okay. If you want to call him favorites. I think you have 16 players.
Sure.
If you asked me to bet on like four players among all others, of course I would put Magnus there. Mm-hmm. And I would probably put myself. Just for personal reasons. But also because I think I do have decent results overall in this. And a lot of people, I think, would put Hikaru. I think it's very fair to put Hikaru. He's had consistent results and he is capable of winning this event. And I wouldn't think it's crazy to put Levon as the fourth player. I mean, again, you could be proven wrong. I mean, he could have a bad event. He had one in Weisenhaus. But he's won Fischer Random events in the past. He's definitely very capable. And I would not, in a like single match, I would not place Prague over Levon. I wouldn't place Arjun over Levon. I wouldn't place, I wouldn't place Keimer over Levon for sure. I mean, first of all, Levon won a match against Keimer in...
Sindarov?
Of course not. I mean, no. Like Sindarov would also be one of those like dark horses for me. But I would probably pick Levon over Sindarov. I think that he's like his top level is a bit higher.
Of course, his ceiling is way higher.
But like Sindarov's fighting ability, of course, can compensate for a lot of things. I mean, he's a tremendous fighter. And in a single match, Sindarov could easily beat Levon. But if I was forced to, I would put money on Levon.
Sure.
So to me, he's like one of those potential favorites, you know? Like maybe hasn't been the most consistent, but definitely can win. And I think he definitely deserved it fully over anyone else by far.
100%.
I think it wasn't like one of those lucky things. He beat Magnus in a 2-game match to decide who would get knocked out immediately, which, as you mentioned, Magnus didn't make it. So it was a messy match for sure. But the first game, Levon outplayed him cleanly. The second game was complete shit show. But I understand they're very nervous. It's a long day. Well,
how would you like the Hans commentary? Hate watch. The Hans hate watch.
Actually, pretty entertaining. Hate to admit it, but pretty entertaining. The game was a mess. It was fun. I did watch, of course. It was very fun to watch. So he went through Magnus first. Then he beat Hikaru. This was his most dangerous moment of the tournament because he lost the first game. And the second game, at some point, was heading towards a draw. Levon had... two bishops, and he had doubled f-pawns and a d-pawn, and Hikaru had knight and bishop, and he had an f-pawn and h-pawn, so Hikaru was down a pawn, but there's doubled f-pawns, and at some point Hikaru could have just pushed his pawn to h6, or to h7, and then there would be nothing that Levon could do. The game would be over. In fact, the position is so drawn, I don't know if we could like get a board for this, but Levon could capture the d-pawn with his knight, and then even sacrifice he didn't have an f-pawn, he had a g-pawn. There was a knight on f4 and a pawn on g3, not an f-pawn. So he could have at any moment played like, knight e6 takes d4, sacrificing the knight, and then even giving up the g-pawn. And the position with a bishop on g6, pawn on h7, versus black's bishops on e5, e4, and pawns on f6, f5, with black's king on h8, is a fortress. Mm-hmm. Which is a very funny fortress. There were even easier fortresses. Like he could have, doesn't matter. But even that one was a fortress. So he just had to push his h-pawn. But for some reason, Hikaru got worried by his body language, clearly worried, and then kept his pawn on h5, where it was much less restrictive of Black's king. And then the technical phase by Levon after that was... I mean, it wasn't losing already, but it was going downhill for Hikaru, and the technical phase by Levon was excellent. And then he won that queen endgame we talked about, and that was it.
Yeah.
I think there was like one final game, but I don't remember anything special going on in that game. So he went through Ikaru, obviously huge challenge as well.
Arjun.
Then he beat Arjun 2-0.
Fairly easy, yeah.
I think it came down to the first game. Convincingly, but it came the first game. The opening was very bad for Lawan, but at some point, Arjun like blunders that there's bishop takes d4, I think. And then it suddenly gets very dangerous for him, and he wins the first game of black. Second game was very smooth. 2-0 against Arjun. And the last match, I wouldn't say smooth, because he was losing the first game in an obstacle or bishop endgame. But if you consider the second game overall...
You mean like the match against
Hans? The match against Hans, the final. Yeah. If you consider the second game where he did win very convincingly, then I would say overall smooth match.
Yeah.
Of course, danger in the first game, it comes down to the first game very often.
That second game against Hans was so strange because for whatever reason, Hans decided to spend 70% of his time in the first five moves. 10 moves.
Yeah, he probably didn't like the opening.
Did you have those moments in any position? Because obviously, you've talked about this, sometimes the position is just really bad for black. Did you feel that way in this tournament?
It wasn't bad, but it was dangerous.
Mm.
But the computer very often shows that there's a lot of possibilities that for humans are hard to understand are fine.
Yeah.
It was a very unfamiliar position and it looked dangerous, but it was surprisingly okay for black for quite a while. But the trajectory of the game was just that, you know, white was pressing the opening and Hans was getting low on time. And at some point it was just, there was no return. You know, the position was too bad. The time situation was too bad. There was no coming back from it. So that was the final, Lawan first, Hans second, Magnus third came from
the lower
a tough situation.
Yeah.
Won a lot of matches, so overall I think he was probably happy, mm-hmm. all things considered, just because he won so many matches. It actually kind of feels good to do that. And third place isn't bad. Hikaru fourth, losing to Magnus in the final match. Third, fourth, which they weirdly, like I was checking on chess.com, and they weirdly put that as the grand final, and the match Lawan Hans as the final.
What?
Like that's how it was listed.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
The final was Lawan Hans, but then if you went to lower bracket on the kind of drop-down menu, then
I mean on the app, on the chess.com app, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. On the drop-down menu, it said grand final.
I thought it was on the broadcast. Somewhere.
I was fifth. I beat Arjun 2-0 in the final match. Kind of similar to how Lawan beat him. Like, first game, very, very shaky, but winning with black, and then the second game, Arjun wasn't quite himself.
What's your take on Hans and his performance? Obviously, this is the first time we're seeing him sort of in the mix with the top players playing one of these big events. We've seen him at the US Championships. Obviously, he's done quite well, but this is freestyle. We haven't seen him in freestyle. Is he a contender if he gets to play these events regularly?
Yeah, I would say he's one of those players who's... I would put him in the same category as like Noderbeck or similar level, you know, mm-hmm. basically a top 10 player. It's a bit of a small data set, so maybe I'm reaching too many conclusions, but yeah, I would say not obviously not the same style, not exactly the same level, but very similar to like Noderbeck. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
If we're judging based on Vegas, it's one event, but still, I think it's a fair...
I think he's very good at practical play. Like perhaps he sometimes makes strange decisions and gets in trouble because of that, but practically he has this sort of fearless style which helps.
He has a good game sense, yeah, I would say that. He feels like when it's bad and he should start to play very practically and then he feels when it's good and he should try to take more time.
Like for example the queen c1 against you. I think that was a good decision.
Sure, yeah, that's an example.
And he took it very quickly.
I think he realized that basically he's busted, things just went very wrong, and now is the time to just play very quickly and hope it gets to a time scramble. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It was a good decision. It was kind of a regrettable game for me.
But not easy. I mean, I was watching it with the engine, and obviously the engine is helping always, but the lines that the engine was showing were not clear at all to me.
It was a kind
and
of
even
murky.
At the end, when you repeat it, I think it was a good practical.
No, true. I think probably at the end I should be repeating because
be repeating.
I'm like barely better anymore.
Yeah.
the like kind of chances I had were probably connected to knight. There was a moment when I could maybe sack the exchange, rook to c3. That was one. Or after I trade rooks to play knight d5, put my king in the center. Those were like the clearest things. You wouldn't say clear win, but the position's a bit murky. You kind of have to get your hands dirty, unfortunately. Mm. Or the other thing is I can maneuver my king to h7. Maybe that's a clean way. Mm. But it's still, it's a position. You don't win on the spot. I didn't realize he could take on h6. And then after that, it's just...
Yeah,
just a mess.
That is too much.
Yeah. It's just a mess. And then he played a really fantastic second game. The opening was really unfortunate for me. Really unfortunate opening. I mean, I was careless. And like I played g3 too quickly. I should just play knight f3 castle. Then I guess it's about equal. After I play g3, just I can no longer castle. It's like a weird, really weird pattern where I just always get hit with this queen h3. So that was a really good game by him. Yeah, the final match was overall, I think his final match didn't look too great, but everything before that was quite good. The preliminary was pretty good. Match against Sundar was pretty good. Match against me was, I think it was a tough match for him. And I definitely had more chances than I made use of. But yeah, he did play a really important, really good final game, and that's very often what it comes down to.
Cool. All right. I think that's it. You're off to Riyadh. You're off to the Esports World Cup. You're going to have to bring your own keyboard and mouse. Good luck with that. Have fun. Enjoy, and probably you're going to have the same problems with the noise. But yeah, new experience. Team Liquid should be good. Should be a lot of fun. Yeah,
we'll see. I have no idea what it's going to be like. I just don't know. I mean, I'm leaving very soon for Riyadh. Yeah. And then it starts pretty soon after that.
Yeah.
But I have no idea besides that what it's going to be like.
Cool. All right, Fabi, have fun in Riyadh. Good luck and bring it home. And yeah, we'll speak after. Cheers, guys. Hope you enjoyed. Don't forget, like, subscribe, and all the good stuff, because that's the best way you can help the growth of the channel and what we do here at C Squared. So cheers, and we'll see you in the next one.